Montana talks here. Live and local. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint. Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
49 years in the United States Army. My goodness, I thought 20 plus years was long. Some of you think 6 months in the Army is a little long. 49-year career in the United States Army. He just retired in 2023. I tell you what, tonight, the Billings Christian School has yet another incredible speaker for their annual banquet. I have the honor of emceeing the banquet tonight, and we've got their keynote speaker in studio right now as we speak, retired Army Major General Tom Soljom. General, what an honor to have you here in studio with us. Thanks for coming.
Thank you for the invitation. I'm excited about the opportunity to invest in Billings Christian School and to have this opportunity to speak to your listening audience this morning. So thank you.
Well, I'm excited for our buddy John Jackson, the Joker from X, to jump in on the conversation here in a few minutes as well, because he spent time overseas with law enforcement, but also with our military troops. What did you say, 70 months in combat? Yes. As a chaplain?
That's correct. Yes, it started with Desert Shield, Desert Storm. They actually made a movie called The Fighting Spirit. It tells the story of the chaplain corps. And I got a little segment in there, and they did a mock clip of me in Desert Shield, Desert Storm. There was an occasion where there was about 70 Iraqis. Everybody was surrendering, if you remember those pictures. But there were about 70 people that were in fighting positions, and I was in a vehicle, and I was the senior person in the vehicle. It was a lieutenant. Rambin. We stopped at the top of this ridge, and we could see these people down there, and I made the assessment, this isn't going to go well. So I took off all my gear, walked down to them as a show of, you know, I'm not here to do harm. I'm going to ask if anybody here speaks English. And out from around behind the bunker comes a major, Iraqi major, and we began a conversation, and I said, where did you learn to speak English like that? And he said, the University of Minnesota. Saddam forced him back through his family, right? His family was still in Iraq, forced him to come back, put on a uniform, and serve.
Wow.
And so the short story of this is that in conversation, I showed him a picture of my family. I have three sons and a daughter. And he saw the crosses on my uniform, and he informed everybody that I was a holy man who has three sons. And that culture, sons are very important. And so I could hear, as we're talking, I could hear now our element arriving, locking and loading on that position. And I put up my hand to kind of wave them off, and I told him, just walk towards them. You're going to be treated, you know, fairly.
Almost like parting the seas, really, between two warring armies. That's incredible. General Soljom, hold that thought. He's got an incredible story. I can't wait you to hear more right after this.
Big topics, big ideas, big sky, Montana Talks.
Yeah, so General Soljom, who we have the honor of talking with here in studio this morning, he speaks at the Billings Christian School fundraising banquet tonight. I mentioned his 49-year career in the U.S. Army. He eventually ended up serving as the chaplain for all of United States Special Operations Command. He eventually also was the head of all of the U.S. Army's chaplain corps and served over the course of his career with several elite units, Army Rangers, Airborne units, Special Forces units, and other elite units. So it's just got a remarkable career to talk about. But this story, going back to, you know, the first Iraq War, if that's what we want to call it, So this is just remarkable. So it's basically you and the lieutenant and a couple of NCOs, and you pull up and you see this massive army in front of you. And so then eventually the battalion commander from the 82nd Airborne shows up, and he apparently ripped you a new one. Huh?
He did. He did. That's putting it mildly. I won't use the language. And basically threatening that if I did anything so stupid again in the future, that he'd kill me himself. And he said, I don't want to be the guy writing your wife a note because you're a knucklehead. And then he looked at me and smiled and winked and said, we are proud and glad you're our chaplain.
John, you asked a really good question while we were talking during the break with General Soljam. They throw that question out for our listeners as well.
You always wonder in that moment, because I've experienced those moments myself, and I was wondering what made you think in that moment, I can do this, I can make peace here.
Yeah, I think it's a combination of what is instilled in you. So it's a leadership decision. You realize that you're in charge. You're kind of, we were separated from the screening force, so we were isolated vehicle. They had eyes on us. We had a 50 cal. And I just thought there was a better way. And so I really, divine intervention, I will use that terminology. I just felt that I had, to, as a leader, I needed to do the right thing in that moment. And I thought the right thing in that moment was to take off all of my equipment and walk down to that position. And I did so. I had absolute confidence that in that decision, it was the right thing to do. I wasn't concerned about my life. I felt protected.
I was joking with you during the break. I could just imagine you as the chaplain. How old were you at the time during that?
I was in my mid-30s.
Which is old for the Army. It's still young, but that's old for Army people, yeah. Right? You know, you got some young lieutenant there with you. But I could just picture you, you know, bouncing around in the backseat of this Humvee with all your gear on, and there's dust everywhere, And then all of a sudden, I mean, you must have just, were you praying continuously?
Yes. And I think, you know, to get kind of a sense, you know, so there's A-10s, there's artillery going off in the background. So there's the sounds of combat around you. So this is not like an isolated frame. It's this fog of war, so to speak, that's going on around you. You see a situation, you feel also responsible for the other three teammates that you're with. So I told them to stay put. It all worked out fine. And there's a movie, I would, to your viewing, listening audience, there's a movie called The Fighting Spirit, and it tells the story 250 years now of the Chaplain Corps. George Washington looked out over that Continental Army, farmers, shopkeepers, merchants, and he said, I quote, who's going to care for the soul of this army? And so he petitioned Congress, if you can imagine Congress getting anything done in 5 weeks. He petitioned Congress in July 29th, 1775, before we were even a nation, the Chaplain Corps was established. So the Fighting Spirit talks about the legacy from our founding of God and soldier, God and country being seen as one. And the chaplain's responsibility is to care for the souls of individuals who are willing to lay down their lives for something other than self, for the love of God and the love of their country and their fellow teammates, soldiers.
I can't imagine what all you've seen, especially with some of the elite units that you've served with. I mean, we had an incredible chaplain when I was in Afghanistan, who came out after we had some tough losses, and he just rode in the MRAPs and the Humvees with us, and you know, we dismounted from the vehicles, and he stayed back with the driver and the gunner and just talked with them. But you know, the locals in Afghanistan would call him Imam Pache, but yep. He was Chaplain Pace, but they'd call him an imam because there was a respect for a man of faith,
yes.
Right? And so, but yeah, I can't imagine what you saw in all your more than just riding alongs.
I think it's incarnational presence, right? You're there among them, you're with them. So you share the soldiers' hardships, you do what they do. I went to Ranger School, I was a master parachutist, so I put people out of perfectly good airplanes myself. When you do those things with soldiers, it develops a rapport. And before you speak, you build these relationships and you build this rapport so that when bad things happen or just on a casual day of conversation, the soldier will open up and talk about their faith or their lack thereof and belief. And so to me, it was a wonderful, wonderful, I call it a mission field. And you form relationships with people and you have touch points. So it's really incredible as God is guiding your steps, right? You're just a tool for his use. And you encounter somebody, you have a conversation, which I have long forgotten about now with social media. They pop up, they see me on social media. Now that I'm out of uniform, I can actually get on these venues, right?
Reconnect with
people. Yeah, reconnect. And it's like, hey, back in, you know, whatever, 1990, you and I had this conversation, and it turned my life in a whole nother direction.
It reminds me of a great quote that my friend Charlie Loveridge just shared the other day. I'll try to remember that one right after this.
You're listening to Montana Talks, bringing truth and freedom to Montana. Here's your host, Aaron Flint.
Yeah, John Jackson, the Joker from X, sidekicking with us here on this Tuesday morning as well. He was the head of all chaplains. Not John. John's a great guy, though, but served this country as a retired federal law enforcement officer. But General and Chaplain Tom Soljam is speaking at the Billings Christian School banquet tonight. But, you know, this story that he shared, John, about now that he's able to out of uniform and able to get on social media, he's reconnecting with all these people. And our friend Charlie Loveridge, he shared a great quote the other day, and I think it was from, he attributed it to P.J. Maloney, if I remember right. But the quote was this: friends for a season, friends for a reason, friends for life. And you see that in law enforcement, you see that in military, but you see it in small town Montana too. You might be friends with these people for 1 year or for 6 months or 1 week even, but 50 years later, you're going to see them down the road, and it's going to be like you never missed a beat, right? I mean, you could say that from the law enforcement side too, right, John?
100%. And, you know, having been beside thousands of agents and military people in my career, it's that handful of people that you look down the barrel of death with those people. And those people, you never forget them. They're, like you say, you hadn't seen them in 15 years. You call them up and y'all meet, or what you talk, it's just like, I mean, y'all's friendship is solid. It's as it's ever been. It's never going to change.
Some of the units that you've been in as well, General, holy cow. I mean, just some of the remarkable men and women you've gotten to meet over that time. I can only imagine.
Yeah, it's a real privilege. And I think we were talking in the break about the family, too. They form bonds. So while you're deployed in a way, you know, whether it's for training or combat, you know, these families form bonds. And they form lasting relationships. My kids. They formed relationships with kids, and now today, because of social media, they're still connected. It's like time. The only thing that's passed is time. But it hasn't changed the substance of what they, a common bond of shared hardship. And I think this is what's really, culturally, what's missing in our culture is it's the nihilism of our culture. It's about self. It's not. That's a bad worldview. It's really about others. And joy and fulfillment comes in serving other people. That's where you get real satisfaction, if you want to use that terminology, or real joy and real peace. When you're doing things not for yourself, when you set yourself aside and you see the other person or you see the people. And in those difficult times of hardship that you share together, that forms a bond that it's lifelong. You know, they say soldier for life. There's a lot of truth in that statement.
You know, the last time I got to catch up with you, when it was first announced that you were going to be the keynote speaker for the Billings Christian School banquet tonight. And by the way, I heard from Jake with BCS. They have one table left. So if you want to get that one last table, maybe get some fellow veterans to go with you, or get your employees, you know, reward them. The event is tonight. Message us on the Montana Talks app, and I'll link you up with the BCS crew. They have one more table. Last I heard, anyway. General, last time I caught up with you, though, I love your message here, because not only can we as military veterans or law enforcement veterans identify with this, but I think any guy or gal who grew up in a small town, can identify with this message as well. You're not only going to talk about the virtues of serving in the military, but you're going to talk about some of the vices as well, and some of the vices that might be a little easy to come by, and your own personal story, because, you know, you had a pretty rough and tumble life growing up, and what was it, some NCO who finally smacked you upside the head and got you in the right direction, huh?
Yeah, you know what kind of people are going to go to heaven? Forgiven people. That's the only kind. And so I grew up in this small community. I grew up on a ranch.
North Dakota. Lefse.
Yeah, my wife, don't you know?
That's right.
And my wife grew up on a farm, and there is a distinct difference between those two.
That's right.
My parents divorced, and we moved off the farm, and that whole world that I knew, that existence, kind of crumbled. I don't need to go into the details today. Those things have all been forgiven. But I crashed. I became angry, bitter, resentful. I got kicked out of public school in my sophomore year. My grandfather intervened and sent me to a private Christian school, Lutheran school, Oak Grove Lutheran. I did not make the most of that experience, but it was a buffer to keep me from total destruction.
It did something. It started something.
It started. And then I joined the military, and my mom was happy to sign to get me out of Dodge.
That was your way out.
I was running from things. And I was running to find something. And what I found in Germany in that era of 1974 was an incubator of vices. Drugs, alcohol, all of the lifestyle associated with it.
Work hard, play hard.
Yeah.
I
hit bottom. Two-time drug overdose, and finally an NCO, a medic, intervened. He saw what condition my condition was in, and he said, hey, can I just ask you, let's step over here. He pulled me aside, and he said, can I ask you a question? I said, sure, doc. He said, is your life worth living this way? And I was just stunned. No one had ever asked me that kind of a probing question before. Out of genuine concern, you got to get the context of this is a black man in 1975 in the United States Army, where we had race riots on the Kaserne in Germany, Bamberg. We had rampant drug use in the barracks. I was a heroin addict. That's the context. He's a sharecropper son from Kentucky. Why should he care about a white guy? But he had a relationship with the Lord. And I could see in him there was something different. You can see light in people. And he asked me that question, and then he said, please come by my room and let's talk. Well, I didn't want to do that. And so after I got off of extra duty, which you don't get extra duty because you've been a good boy, I went to my room, and it was about 10 o'clock at night, and I know today what it was. It was God speaking to me, and he said, not audible, but in my inner self, said, you go to that man's room now, or your life is going to be destroyed. I was on that. And so I went to his room. I knocked on his door. He opened. We talked. I'll make this quick. All night, I verbal vomit. My life, just spilling my guts to this man. I think we call it confessing. And he was so patient, and he just smiled. He had two gold teeth, and he just had such a pleasant countenance. And then at the end of it, when we were winding down, the sun was starting to come up. This was all night. And several times I said, I apologize, and said, I really need to, and he said, no. And then he said, can I just read? He asked for permission. Can I read you a passage of scripture? And he read from John's gospel, and he talked about how much God loved that he gave his son. And then he went to 1 John. He said, if anyone has sinned, if you confess your sins, he's faithful and just to forgive you of your sins and cleanse you from all unrighteousness. That was it. I knelt at his bunk and asked Christ to come into my life, and my life was altered and transformed and changed in a moment.
I was going to joke. That was kind of like your oofta moment.
It was my oofta moment. Yeah.
To go on the North Dakota.
Yeah, two 2x4s upside this head.
Two 2x4s of oofta on that one. Yeah, John Jackson, there is something about that virtue and vice thing, right? Where it's like, you know, and it's a challenge for even, you know, like I say, even growing up in small town Montana, you work hard, you play hard, and then you realize like, oh man, maybe I play a little too hard, and I got it. And that can get a lot of veterans, both law enforcement and military, and you know, can really cause problems.
Yeah, that's that the classic rock bottom moment you're talking about there. And I wanted to tell you my own, I grew up with a Lutheran pastor who was a chaplain in the Korean War. And that's what you're talking about, somebody grabbing you up. You're like, you know, that guy grabbed you up and said, you're going to the military. This guy, you'd be in Sunday school with him. And if you were talking or misbehaving, he had one of those Bibles, you know, it's about 2 or 3 inches thick. He would come around, and you're like 12, 13 years old. He would come around and take that thing and just crack it right over. Just crack it right over here. Be quiet, you know. And see, since he had been a chaplain in the war, I mean, you just automatically just stood up straight and listened to the man. And that was that same guy. When you were misbehaving, he just come around and pop.
How did you navigate, or I guess, what do you want to share? We've only got a couple minutes here.
I'll tell you what's important for your listeners, and you mentioned, you know, just rural, small-town America, right? So you got to go back. So I had to go back to that environment, but I wasn't the same person. And then you encounter people that knew you in a different way. It's humorous how God works and how he redeems the times. You can do terrible things, make bad mistakes, but God can redeem those things. And so here's the funny twist. So in 2018, I was the deputy chief of chaplains for the Army. Oak Grove Lutheran High School gave me the Lifetime Achievement Award. My friends showed up in disbelief. They said, no, we got to go see this for ourselves. This couldn't be Tom Soljam, right? And so that's the goodness of God, that even in a small community, he can turn things around in your life, and he can repair the damage that you may have caused in relationships and to other people because you had a little bit too much vice.
Yeah.
Vice virtue. And people will see the change in you. And they will embrace the change. Not always does everybody celebrate the change in you, but for the most part, those that matter will.
And it might inspire change in them as well.
Absolutely. You become a model for other people. If I can overcome this, well, then you can certainly overcome that. And this generation, we're really challenged with this generation. We have a cultural issue, and I know our time's running short, but we have a real cultural issue. We're in decline, and our young people don't have the grit. I saw it, them coming into the military. They don't have the grit. They don't have a sense of purpose, optimism. But they didn't have people who would hit them over the head like that. They were coddled.
Yeah.
And it's really not healthy.
Well, and General, I can't wait to hear you tonight. This has been absolutely incredible. General Tom Soljam.
This is where Montana Talks Ag with Lane Nordlund.
Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent on Monday says up to 70 nations are already wanting to negotiate with the Trump administration over last week's tariffs. In addition to this, President Trump said yesterday that Japan is coming to the negotiating table.
You know, I spoke this morning with the Prime Minister of Japan, and we had a very good conversation. They're coming. And I said, one thing, you're going to have to open up your country because we sold no cars, like zero cars in Japan. And they sold millions of cars into our country. They don't really take our agriculture, a little bit of it, just to keep us slightly happy, but they don't take what they're supposed to be taking. So we have a great relationship with Japan. We're going to keep it that way, but they're coming in to meet, and other countries are coming in.
President Trump is also threatening an additional 50% tariff on China.
With China, as you know, against my statement, they put a 34% tariff on above what their ridiculous tariffs were already. And I said, if that tariff isn't removed by tomorrow at 12 o'clock, we're putting a 50% tariff on above the tariffs that we put on. So they've gone for years. They've become a rich country because of people, again, that were in the White House that allowed this to happen.
If imposed, U.S. companies bringing in certain goods from China could face a 104% tax. I'm Lane Nordlund.
Hi, everybody.
Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Wow, I tell you what a remarkable guest we just had on the show there with, Chaplain and retired Major General Tom Soljam. I can't wait to hear more of his conversation tonight at the Billings Christian School fundraising banquet. We're going to shift tracks now. We got another great guest on the show with us right now. He's just about to head to the White House in about an hour. Montana Governor Greg Gianforte. Governor, hey, thanks for joining us here this morning. I understand we may get some very good news out of President Trump here pretty soon.
Yeah, Aaron, good to be with you. And absolutely, yeah. I'm here in D.C. at the invitation of the president. There's going to be a significant announcement this afternoon at 3 p.m. Eastern time, 1 o'clock Montana time, an executive order related to energy and American energy dominance. It's going to be good news for Montana. I can't share too much just yet, but he promised that he was going to make America energy dominant again, and that's what this is all about, removing barriers for permitting of oil and gas exploration. A particular focus today on coal, which is going to be good for coal strip in Montana because we have more coal than any other state in the country, and we need more energy production. Joe Biden, who's picking winners and losers, and as a result, our energy costs went up 30%. Energy dominance is about driving our economy, keeping costs low. It's also about national security. So I'm pleased to be I'll be at the White House later today, side by side with President Trump, to support the efforts that he's bringing forward.
Yeah, I can't wait to hear the big news on that front. And you were just at the White House, I think, meeting with President Trump, I think a couple of times already thus far, and we haven't even hit the first 100-day mark.
He's been so engaged. I'll tell you, it was like spending time in the desert with Joe Biden. We'd send letters. I'd get, over 20 governors just asking for a meeting, and we got crickets. Even before President Trump got in office, he says, "Hey, Govs, why don't you come down to Mar-a-Lago? Let's talk about how we're going to get stuff done for the American people." I've been back here to Washington a number of times since he got into office. Today, we're focused on energy. Energy drives our economy. It's key to national security. And we got to get the federal government out of the way.
You know, it's amazing just seeing the day-to-day headlines and hearing the day-to-day headlines, the panickins, as they're being called in the media, with the constant fear-driven media reports. I mean, did they learn nothing from President Trump's first term? He delivered. He delivers. And yet, here they go, panicking, reporting. And yet, already this morning, we're seeing a rebound in the markets. You've got 60 to 70 countries going to Donald J. Trump saying, let's make a deal. Our friends in Taiwan, you've worked very closely with our great trading partner and friends in Taiwan. Their president last night came out and said, we want to have a tariff-free relationship.
Yeah, the president was very clear. He's going to use tariffs as a negotiating tool. He is the deal master. And he very clearly pointed out, which we've known for a while, other countries have not treated America fairly. He said he's going to put America first. We all had to, pause a little bit. But this is working out. Japan, as you reported here recently, is coming to the table saying, no, we want to open up our markets. And it just makes sense to have reciprocal fair trade. 70 countries, I understand, have now come to the table and said, yeah, we want to work with you. Let's sit down and let's work this out. My belief is that this is gonna pass as we get fair trade agreements in place. President Trump is committed to doing the right thing for the American people, and it's going to get done.
Yeah, you mentioned Japan and coal. Our friends in Japan are big fans of Montana coal, the Signal Peak Energy coal. A lot of that, with the Bull Mountains mine south of Roundup, heads to Japan for their power there. So if Japan likes coal power, well, what the heck? Why shouldn't we here in America, right? And so it sounds like that's some of the good news President Trump's going to help deliver later today.
Yeah, over 95% of the coal that comes out of the Bull Mountain mine south of Roundup gets on a train car and it goes to Japan. It keeps the lights on there. And from a national security perspective, the reason that's important is as they've, as Japan has moved away from nuclear power after their big disaster, they've been building coal plants. Their other source for coal, other than Montana coal, is coal from Australia. Unfortunately, coal from Australia, A, has a lot higher sulfur content, so it's not good for the environment. But secondly, it has to go through the South China Sea. And I understand from my conversations with the Japanese consul, they've only got less than a month's worth of coal in inventory. If China were to block the South China Sea, lights go out in Japan within a month.
Wow.
Now, Montana coal transits across Montana to the West Coast, goes on ships across the Northern Pacific. This is a national security issue for Japan, the Bull Mountain mine in Montana.
Yeah, that's fascinating. Hey, I would say, too, you know, whenever the governor's on the show with us, he loves taking your phone calls. If you have a quick question or a comment, 406-294-0970. Or you can also message us on the Montana Talks app, which reminds me, I need to go in there and just check and see if we've got some messages that have come in here this hour. Governor, you know, obviously that one of the biggest issues of the day remains the, you know, illegal aliens, you know, 10 to 20 million, who knows how many illegal aliens were allowed to invade this country under the Joe Biden, John Tester regime. But I think a lot more illegal aliens are being deported out of Montana than even we are hearing about, because I've talked with Judge Ashley Harada in Yellowstone County. She says, yep, she's seeing them and they're processing them for removal. Border Patrol, I see more and more headlines every day. ICE, a new headline out of Bozeman about more deportations there. So that's why I think, you know, your reaction to this Supreme Court ruling yesterday where the Supreme Court said, yes, President Trump has the authority to use the Alien Enemies Act to get these illegals the heck out of here.
Well, it just makes sense. I mean, we have violent criminals that have been led into this country illegally by the prior administration, and they're in our communities. We've seen arrests up in Havre and Bozeman. They're in Montana. I will say, last week I was in Billings. We had many federal law enforcement agencies there. There is a level of collaboration we haven't had in a long time. And we need to round up these violent criminals and ship them back home or send them to El Salvador where they can't get away. Pleased to see the Supreme Court ruling. We have a collaborative working relationship on the law enforcement side that we have not seen in a while. And a significant portion of these illegal immigrants are in the Gallatin County area. We know this because we're starting to get some data exchanged back and forth. More than 1,000 people in the state of Montana. But as we've seen, the Trendyagua criminals in Bozeman rounded up, shipped out. We had some arrests, I think it was just last week, up along the High Line. But we can't be done until the number one responsibility of government is to keep our communities safe. That's why I was proud to stand with Chief St. John and Sheriff Linder last week in Billings, along with FBI and other folks that are working collaboratively to make sure our communities are safe.
Yeah, and I've got that full press conference of you with Chief St. John and Sheriff Linder talking about increased prison capacity, something that is desperately needed in this state. That'll help with jail overcrowding across Montana as well. And then, of course, U.S. Attorney Kurt Almy. He was your budget director in your first term, and he's once again serving as U.S. Attorney. They're now surging FBI resources into Indian country to go after the missing and murdered indigenous women cases in particular, but really thousands of open cases. So that's huge news for Indian country.
And that's what we talked about. I mean, the folks expect the communities to be safe, but if we can't lock up violent criminals, we can't make our community safe. And we've kicked the can down the road too far. This is why last session we put over $200 million into our prison system. And that just kind of got our facilities up to snuff. But it didn't add a lot of beds. That's why this session I put another $150 million into our budget out of one-time money that came because we had a fiscally conservative budget to build 500 more beds in Deer Lodge. And then also another $250 million to look at the entire prison system in Montana to make sure that we have the capacity to lock up violent criminals.
All right, we got a message that just came into our Montana Talks app from Levi from Redstone. I'll get to that here after the break. Looks like we got to hit the break pretty much right now. Tax relief, of course, that's the other key angle to what President Trump is doing, is maneuvering for right now. It's not only about lowering interest rates. It's not only about lowering energy prices, two things that are happening, but keeping the Trump tax cuts in place has got to be part of the equation. What about tax relief here in Montana? Sounds a little iffy in the legislature right now on both property tax relief and income tax relief. So we'll see what the governor's hearing next.
Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Short-term pain, long-term gain. We've been talking a lot about that when it comes to the economy, tariffs, and more. But you guys know the concept, short-term pain, long-term gain. You go to the gym, you work out, you exercise. You're going to get a little pain in the short term, but you're going to get some long-term gain. Well, what if I told you there is an incredible Montana company that can help you with the long-term gain and help you with the pain. Plus, it'll give you some energy while you go get that workout in as well. Yeah, Lee is a Marine Corps veteran, Big Fork, Montana. I met him at Trump's inauguration in D.C., and he's got a great product, Power Plus Pain Aid. More gain, less pain, drug-free pain relief, and it's an energy drink basically at the same time as well. Here's the deal. Go to drinkpowerplus.com, drinkpowerplus.com, and you can get 15% off by using the code FLINT15, FLINT15 at checkout. Okay, here we go. Again, that's drinkpowerplus.com. Back to it with Governor Greg Gianforte. Governor, where do you see income tax and property tax relief? It sounds like it's up in the air right now. I was much more optimistic that we would see both delivered here through the legislature, but it sounds a little iffy right now.
Well, Aaron, I think the people of Montana sent me to the governor's office and sent the legislature to their positions to deliver tax relief. And we have a responsibility to deliver it. I am still optimistic. The legislature has been working hard. It's a circuitous route to get to the finish line. But I would say the fat lady's not singing yet. I think we have to work together to lower property taxes. We've been advocating for our homestead rate reduction. I still think that's the best solution. It would lower homeowners' property taxes about 15%, small businesses 18%, also indirectly help renters. But here's what we can't do. We can't take income tax dollars to fund property taxes because we already have the highest income tax rate in the region. So we've got to do the property tax relief without tapping into income taxes, but we also have to lower income taxes because we have the highest rate in the region. I was pleased to see Donald Trump Jr. come out in favor of our tax plan. Charlie Kirk also came out in favor of it. I have an obligation. Let me just say, we have an obligation, me and the legislature, to deliver for the people of Montana. There's still time left on the clock. We can get it done.
Well, I'm no Charlie Kirk or Don Jr., but I'm in favor of it as well. Across the board tax relief. You're exactly right. We can do both. We should be able to do both. You've got a budget surplus right now. It just makes sense. Levi in Redstone, he was asking about, I believe it's House Bill 676 that would allow for selling certain parcels of state land. I think these are parcels that are surrounded by private land. He was wondering where that bill is and if the people holding the lease get the first shot at buying those parcels. The last I heard, I think that bill was kind of put on hold, but I don't know the latest.
Yeah, there are hundreds and hundreds of bills in process. Some of them are good ideas. Some of them will make it to my desk. And I make it a policy of not commenting on bills that are still going through the process. I'll talk about policy because there could be an amendment thrown on at the last minute and make it so I can't sign it. But the idea that I think public land should stay in public hands, sometimes there's an opportunity to upgrade, to sell a piece and bank the money and buy a piece that's more valuable for recreation. I'm in favor of that. But we'd have to look at the bill if it actually gets to my desk.
All right, let's try to sneak in at least a couple of phone calls here if we can. Dave in Kalispell, did you have a quick question or comment?
I do have a quick question. Thanks for taking my call. The school board here in Flathead County wants to pass another levy, and they're blaming it on the state. They say that the state only funds 80% of their budget, so they need to come up with another 20% from levies. Is that a legit statistic?
All right, let's hold it there. Governor, your thoughts. Hopefully you can hear his call well.
Yeah, I did. So thanks for the thing. I would take it with a grain of salt. The bulk of school funding comes from your local property taxes. That's where the bulk of it comes from. Now, there are areas where we step up. In this budget, I propose an incremental $100 million for local schools out of our surplus to help raise teacher pay. That is really a historic increase in funding. What we found in many school districts is there's, again, our teachers do a great job in the classroom, but not enough money is getting to the classroom. It's going into administrative overhead, district leadership. So I would just, I would encourage you, maybe you should run for school board. You could bring some business experience to the management of their budget there. Again, our teacher, my mom was a public school teacher. My daughter's a high school teacher. I have a real heart for this. But the funding formula is established. We did the inflationary increase. On top of that, we put another $100 million in. So this is not, we've never reduced funding for public schools.
Well, Governor, we greatly appreciate your time this morning. Unfortunately, we're out of time. About 10 seconds to go or so, 10 or 20 seconds. If you get something else to say to President Trump, what's that something else going to be?
Well, I think we need a coal port on the West Coast.
Amen to that one. Yeah, and enforce the Interstate Commerce Clause so they can't block us from shipping it on the West Coast as well, right?
Yeah, the topic today is energy. It's about energy dominance, economic prosperity.